Getting ready to join into a great conversation right now. It should be a fun conversation. I've got Ms. Watson, who popped in earlier and had a great conversation about immigration, and we were looking for her earlier, and she's come back, and I know she's going to have some great thoughts on immigration as well as a lot of other things that are going on, including what I think is a little bit of a too hard line stance, but I'm curious to see what Ms. Watson has to say about this as well. So I'm going to bring Ms. Watson into the conversation, and we're just going to join and have some great fun and all of that. So how are you doing, Ms. Watson? How are you doing? I know that you're an immigration attorney, and I was glad that you were able to appear last time. And if you can just share a little bit about your own background, because I'm not even sure how you got involved in immigration law, even though I can definitely tell that you've got some ethnicity of your own and everything. So it might have been something that was a family issue or something that you were interested in from a family standpoint. But just tell us a little bit about yourself, and then I do have some questions about what's going on now. Like, I know that definitely seems like Vice President Kamala Harris went down to Guatemala and had a very hardline stance. In my mind, I was thinking it was a little bit too hardline, but I don't know whether you agree with me or not, but definitely go find out or not. But I just wondered if you could share a little bit about your own background.
Yeah, well, Mark, thank you so much for having me. I'm so grateful and honored to be here with you. So my background, first of all, you can see me. So I am a South Asian. My parents are from Bangladesh. I grew up in London. I was born and raised in London. So if you've tuned into my accent, I am a British American. I moved to America in 2005 after I got married to my husband, a U.S. citizen. And then I went through the immigration process to become a U.S. citizen eventually. But I was a lawyer in the U.K. And when I moved to America, I had to become a lawyer again by taking exams and what have you. And then I fell into immigration, not by choice, but because I didn't have a lot of options at the time, or at least it felt so. But what was interesting is immigration was my calling, and it kept following me until I said, okay, I'll just do this. And once I started practicing immigration law, I just realized I was meant to do this all my life. I loved the practice of immigration law. I'm touching people's lives very directly. It's either their livelihoods or their loved ones. And the area of law is very challenging and interesting. It's always keeping me on my toes. Never a dull day, as they say. And, you know, every morning I wake up and I wonder what the day holds for me. And, you know, the last 4 years went, were interesting. And 2021 continues to be interesting. And my clients are amazing. I am so grateful and honored to help each and every one of them. And then I like to be part of the change that I want to see. So I help, work on immigration policy issues, in my non-spare time. And I love helping my community because immigration is something that affects the community in a very direct way as well. And so my expertise and my community involvement, all of that comes together in really giving back to those who need the help.
Yeah, definitely. And like I was saying earlier, I know that this has definitely been a very important issue. We've seen things going on, like I mentioned to you before, with the Dreamers. And I know that definitely my dad and even his lady friend have been involved in trying to help some of those here in North Carolina. And definitely we have seen even some of the different ways that the different immigrant communities aren't always treated the same. So I've even had people say that sometimes they feel that those that are European immigrants might be treated differently than, say, the Asian immigrants might also be treated differently than some from the African communities and all of that. So I was wondering if you could share a little bit about your thoughts on the ways that we treat our immigrants, because I've always thought, you know, the fairy tale version of what we hear is, you know, give us your poor, your and all of that is on the Statue of Liberty that's over there off of New York. But I don't know that we always do what is said on that great iconic image and everything. But I was just wondering if you could share your thoughts about maybe the different ways we treat our immigrants, and also your thoughts about how we're doing in Latin America. But like I said, I know that Vice President Kamala is over there dealing with a lot of things and didn't have that hardline stance with Guatemala, basically saying, y'all stay over there. Don't come over here.
Let's touch on that before I talk about immigration as a whole. Right. I think the problem that we're seeing at the border, you know, it's gone on for many years. It's not a new thing at all. But what is new is that we have leadership that's trying to get to the root of the problem rather than just stick to what they need to do now. So what I appreciate about this is that if you can try to address the root cause, then we might have a sustainable solution. What we have seen through previous administrations, that these issues come up and the focus is how do we just have a system at the border. And in President Obama's years, there was controversy. He was an amazing president. You know, I'm so appreciative for all the things he did in immigration, but he was also labeled the deporter in chief. Right. And then we had the Trump administration, and there was no humanity whatsoever. Mm-hmm. If you take away children from their parents, babies as young as, you know, a few months, there's no humanity. And how can we see that in a 20th century, 21st century America? You know, I don't think any of us when we were younger would think that this, or younger, even 4 years ago, that we would think America would be treating people this way. So now we fast forward into the Biden-Harris administration, and they have inherited a confluence of problems that is compounded by the COVID pandemic. But what I appreciate is that they're trying to go to the root problem to see that what can be the solution. Now, these problems are not small problems. These are very profound, deep-rooted problems. So I do not expect the solution to be quick either. There needs to be a lot of exploration and collaboration. So I'm not privy to any of those conversations. I wish I were. But from the little that we've seen, you know, the founder of Chobani, the yogurt maker, they've already committed to, you know, helping those economies with jobs and manufacturing. And I mean, I don't know the details, but I do know that efforts have already begun to have some solutions. So I think what we need to do is give time. It took 4 years for the previous administration to really collapse our system. And when something is broken, it takes time to rebuild. But what this administration is showing is humane leadership in trying to rebuild something so it's stronger and build back better, as their slogan was. So yeah. I think people need to have some patience and give some time, because these problems didn't come overnight, and these problems were not created by this administration. They are taking initiative to help find solutions. So that's what I can say about the border. I haven't been there. You know, I don't practice asylum as much as those people do. It's a heartbreaking situation, no matter which way you look at it. But it doesn't help that we had an administration over the last 4 years really take away humanity and how they treat people. Now, coming back to your broader question of how we're treating immigrants, you know, over the years, there have been laws that have been discriminatory. There's no question about it. You know, if you look at the early 1900s, we had the Chinese Exclusion Act. You know, we had quotas that, you know, really don't necessarily reflect what the reality is in the current day. And so immigration reform has been necessary for decades. And we've not had congressional support for immigration reform. So what we need truly is immigration reform. Now, when it comes to treatment of people, I think we go back to the last 4 years where we saw a Muslim ban, which this administration has reversed. We had the previous administration call African countries, you know, a terrible name starting with S, you know, and they really did do everything visibly possible to, you know, really make sure that immigrants were treated badly and even depicted badly. Right. And words matter. How you talk about immigrants really matter. And that is what resulted in shooting in El Paso, because it became okay to, you know, denigrate immigrants. But what we've seen with this administration, again, that they are really looking at, you know, deeply rooted ways in how immigrants are portrayed, and the word alien, you know, is now trying, it's being taken away. So the USCIS is trying to make sure language is used appropriately to make sure we give the respect to human beings. And so I do hope that we will start to see changes. There's a lot of sort of grumbling about it's been 4 months since right. this administration came into office. Why are we not seeing changes quick enough? And what I will say to that is it took some time, and it's still, I don't think the people have been confirmed, that we do have leadership. Not only do we have a president and a vice president that care about the people, but they've also care about leaders that they put in each place. So for the Department of Homeland Security, we have an immigrant who is now right. leading with compassion. You know, it's not an easy job, but they're right. also finding great leaders to be put into USCIS and other positions. USCIS, the agency, United States Citizenship and Immigration Services, that agency has some great leadership that has been nominated. There have been, there was a testimonial, the confirmation hearing. I don't know if those confirmations have actually happened yet, but once that leadership gets into place, I am certain that we will start to see improvements. But one of the things that is important for people to know is right now, because of the way COVID has affected the globe,
yeah.
all immigrants are being treated the same, in my opinion. And that is, there are delays and there are processing delays, there are appointment delays, and everybody universally is affected the same. One of the things that's really important for people to understand is immigration is not just what you see at the border. Immigration is so much more than that. If you think about the phone that you use, the phone that's been operated in the hardware, the software, the network, there are high-skilled immigrants behind the scenes that are maintaining all of those that you don't know about. Those are immigrants that are being employed by American businesses. American businesses are part of immigration. You do not understand that from the way you hear it in the news. You know, immigration is also about families. You know, there are American citizens who have loved ones, whether they're spouses and parents and children in different countries, waiting to get green cards, waiting to come here on visas, that are not able to do it. Immigration is so much more than that. The other thing I want people to understand is immigration is the economy. Immigration is something that should be used as a tool to really help boost the economy of America. You know, I wrote a book called The Startup Visa. I don't know if you can see it. Can you see it? Yeah, there you go. I think my lighting is on. I wrote this book because in 2015, when I wrote the book, it was a culmination of events that led to my saying, well, you know, I just got to tell people why we need immigrants, how immigrants are creating jobs. If you think about the skilled workers that are here, every skilled worker has a multiplier effect on jobs that are created. One person needs a CPA, a doctor, you know, all sorts of professional assistance, and then they need services like a cleaner, a laundry, a cleaner, a gardener, you name it. There are services that people need. If you just think about your own life, you know, if somebody comes to the US, they need that help. So there is a circular, effect on the jobs that get created. But if you think about the businesses that get opened here, they are creating American jobs all the time. So not only are they individually contributing to the economy with their own tax dollars, their own, you know, contribution to the payroll tax and IRS, they're also creating a circular event of other jobs that keep the economy going. So I want people to understand that immigration is so much more than what they see in the news. And if they want to educate themselves, you know, read a little bit more about the immigrants that came here before, you know, we were here or we were born, you know. Anybody that's in America, if you're not Native American, you have ancestors that came here as immigrants. And if you, you know, it's if you think about any of the things that you use on a daily basis, headphones that were, you know, created by Bose, the famous Bose headphones, he's an immigrant. Yeah. If you think about Disneyland, Walt Disney was a second generation immigrant. If you think about going to the stores and you go to Nordstrom, Nordstrom was an immigrant. If you think about the jeans you wear, Levi's jeans, he was an immigrant. If you think about Procter & Gamble, the toothpaste and all the other products you use, Procter & Gamble, they were immigrants. And I have in my book, I have the second edition coming out in July about why we need a visa for startup founders. But there is a chapter about history. And all of these names are in it to remind us that everything that we look at, you know, no matter how you look at immigrants, are integrated into all of that. So, you know, what is important to you? I'd love to know.
Yeah, because one of the things, I'm just sorry to interrupt you, one of the things I found interesting, and it's not an attitude that I have, but I sometimes find it fascinating that when people think about some of the jobs that they don't want to take, and that they get mad and kind to the immigrants that are taking these jobs, a lot of times these are jobs that if you offer them those opportunities, they're the first ones that don't want the jobs, because a lot of these jobs are, they're not easy jobs. They're like construction. They're jobs that have to do with a number of other things as well. So they're not easy jobs to do. And a lot of times they're jobs that, you know, pay some pretty good wages, but they also are very much hard labor, whether it's the migrant farmer or whether it's the construction worker or whether it's the people doing the highways and all of that.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I talk to business owners regularly who cannot find people to take these jobs, whether it is a construction company or whether it's a nursing home, you know, a slaughterhouse. You know, they cannot find these people. So this rhetoric of they're taking our jobs, what jobs are they taking away? Right. When it comes to low skilled, nothing is low skilled about them. You know, I speak to people on a very regular basis. Just to some examples, a construction business owner called me and said, I can't find people who know the right way of the saw. So I'm constantly worried about, are they going to chop their arms off? You know, are they going to have an accident if they come, if I can get them to take the job in the first place? Right. And they take the job just enough time to then leave the job and then maybe claim unemployment. When I speak to these home care business owners, they need people who have nursing experience, because they're taking care of hospice people, people who cannot take care of themselves. Nobody wants to, you know, clean people, you know, who are unable to clean themselves. They can't find people. You know, it's, we do not have a visa category for these low-skilled jobs. And that's something that is essential for our economy. If you think about, if you just think about COVID and you close your eyes for a second, how have we gotten through this pandemic? We're using Zoom, we're using online schooling. A lot of these things have been created or co-founded by immigrants. Zoom founder is an immigrant. Our vaccine, the Moderna vaccine, the Pfizer vaccine, co-founded by immigrants. If you go to the grocery store and you see those shiny apples in the grocery store picked by an immigrant, you know, no matter how you look at it, immigrants have really kept us going in this pandemic. And there's no better demonstration of why immigrants are important in this country. And so, you know, I'm so glad you brought that up, because we need to have immigration reform. Look at each aspect of these things that are in our day-to-day life. So not just the border, but everything else. Because it's good for America, and people need to be, you know, cognizant of their daily lives to understand why. because, you know, there obviously is a very divisive rhetoric going on. And that divisive rhetoric means that some people just follow a crowd without really understanding the issues. And
speaking of that divisive rhetoric, there's another side of that divisive rhetoric that I've heard as well, and I'd love to hear your stances on this also. And that's the divisive rhetoric that comes from what I call the opposite side. So it's not the what you might call the poor man's argument, that, you know, that these people that are taking these jobs and these are low skilled jobs, or not, I won't say low skill, but low low wages in some cases, and definitely hard to do kind of jobs and everything. But then the opposite side that we sometimes hear is that, you know, there are people coming from India or from places like that have good medical programs or good engineering programs, and that they're coming into the United States and taking the high-end jobs. And that's a different attitude than, say, the attitude that you get from those that are talking about taking the other kinds of jobs, because it's almost like the reverse affirmative action argument, but using the immigrants as an example, saying that, you know, like, these doctors are coming from India or from England or from some of the African countries and all of that, and that could be an American working in that high-end job. And I'm here in Durham, North Carolina, and we've definitely got a large amount of immigrants that are working in the Research Triangle Park in science-related jobs and things of that nature. And sometimes the opposite part of that argument is that they self-isolate. And I do know that a lot of times that's a cultural thing, because a lot of times people do like to be among like-minded people and the people that know their traditions and all of that. Because I know even here, I think Cary is sometimes known as like a little India, and there was a couple of other neighborhoods that might have that kind of attitude as well. So what do you say to those folks that want to use what I call the reverse affirmative action argument against immigrants?
I'm so glad you asked that question. Thank you so much. What I will say is, these businesses that are hiring the talent, they're doing that because they cannot find those talented people in America. You know, there is a rhetoric that they're taking the high paying jobs, or these people are not being paid enough. The Department of Labor specifies how much somebody needs to get paid to do a job. So these businesses are actually following the Department of Labor's rules about the wages. So I want to make sure people understand, businesses would not get these visas if they did not follow the rules set by the government already. So that's rhetoric in and of itself. But right. Why are they doing that? We have an education system in this country that does not necessarily emphasize STEM education subject matters. It's coming up in a younger generation. But if you think about the working age group of people, there aren't enough STEM-educated people to do these jobs. I live in Washington State, where we have the headquarters of Microsoft and Boeing and Amazon. There are hundreds and hundreds of openings here all the time. You know, they cannot fill those positions. And so when you talk about people who are coming from India and China and from the African countries, the education system has emphasis on the STEM matters. So when those people come to the US, they're going to schools for the education that America provides for engineers. But American students are not taking those subject matters. So if you peel back the layers and you go to the universities and say, who are your students taking these courses in STEM education matters? They will say a very large portion of these people are foreign students. And then if you peel back the layer even further, and then you go into high school and, you know, even middle school, it's happening now. But the education system hasn't prepared the working age group to fulfill those needs. What is necessary is immigration reform so that the current needs can be met. And I will say that there was immigration reform as a bill in 2013. And what that bill did, which was very, very smart, it said for every immigration fee that was set aside, they would take a portion and put it into education. Because then you've got more money towards education so that the next generation of Americans could have education in those subject matters. So what we need is, we need immigration reform to keep us going, but use immigration to get the country to where it needs to be. We need our systems. We need an overhaul of everything, not just immigration reform, but we need education and history. You know, why are we having these social issues in our country that, you know, really exacerbated in COVID-19 when there were protests? We're not having enough education on anything, really. And so
it's interesting you say that, Ms. Watson, because that's actually one of the arguments that one of my founders of this network talks about. So I know Nick Palveda, who's one of the founders of the network, as well as I would even argue Kim Calhoun, who's another founder. They actually believe that we're in that even though we're in the 21st century, we're teaching 18th century values. And I would actually argue with them that they are actually correct on that. And then we could even say that about the way we treat the immigrants and a number of other people as well. So it doesn't seem that we're doing enough good job, even with our education system. And, you know, it's amazing that we definitely, and I'm glad to be an American, and we definitely claim to be a leader in everything. But there are some categories that we have fallen down in our leadership. So I know that there are some categories that we might even be ranked, you know, 7th, 8th, or 10th in the category, including some that I think are pertinent, like our medical care and other things. But definitely, I mean, definitely I would not plan to move to another country. And I definitely think that under the current administration, I'm liking a lot of the directions we're going in, even though, like with any administration, you like to see some changes that you don't see. But, you know, politicians do have to play the political game, whatever that is and everything. So I was just wondering your thoughts about education. And you alluded to it a little bit, but I'd love to have you maybe even go for a deeper dive into how education can even help the immigration process.
Oh, for sure. You know, I'm a proud American. Proud American, and I wrote an article about my experience of becoming an immigrant, an American. It was in the Seattle Times. So if you Google my name, Tamina Watson, Seattle Times, the article will come up about how humbly I became an American, and it made me a patriot. And I love being an American, but it also, I'm invested in the goodness of America. I want my children who were born here to have a better country for themselves when they grow up, so my children and their children can have a prosperous America, and America can continue to be a leader in the world. So, you know, what's interesting is whether it's healthcare, education, immigration, all of infrastructure, they're all intertwined. It's all about how a country can function. And one thing leads to another about how we must address all of these issues to help the entire country come together. And what I'm very happy to see is this leadership that we have now with the Biden-Harris administration, they are looking at things holistically, but we need to give them time. What is really important to me is to understand and appreciate what leadership is doing right this moment. And I think, you know, in just in the last half an hour or so, I was listening to NPR, and, you know, America is now donating millions of doses of vaccines to the world. And, you know, that is leadership in the world. You know, if we don't have humans, you know, vaccinated around the globe, America, we can't freely travel where we want to. And so there are just so many aspects. It's a complicated subject matter. You know, I'm just an immigration attorney, and I can only talk about the expertise I have, but I see how everything is intertwined and how we need leaders and experts in each aspect to come together and really bring change that we want to see. And so what I would ask your viewers to do is, if they think that they care about one particular aspect, whether it's education or healthcare, or, you know, the environment, or, you know, climate change, or pick your poison. There is room for improvement, and your expertise matters. So go out there and be the change you want to see. And I can say that because I'm doing that every single day to bring the change in immigration, and that will help, you know, the next generation of Americans, but Americans right this moment. And so that's what's important to me, to make sure that we're all doing something. What's really important also is, don't say, okay, we have leaders and then we've just left it to them. Leaders can't lead without people helping them. We are all part of the solution, and we all need to get out there.
No, I definitely agree with you on that. Now, one of the other things, and I mentioned it the last time that you appeared and everything that came up, and it's come up more recently and everything, is this whole concept of what I would call immigration the other way. So that definitely I know what kind of immigration you're talking about is immigration of people coming here and all of that. But definitely it does seem like countries like Ghana, you know, with their call to African-American populations, and I would even argue that there were some people that if a certain person had gotten reelected might have taken it seriously, that they really wanted to move to Canada. And I know that Canada was even looking at that possibility if that had happened. Fortunately, it did not happen. But I was just wondering if you could share your thoughts, and even some of the European countries I know in the past have been expatriate countries, because I know that even, I believe it was Josephine Baker, moved overseas for many years during the time of slavery and all of that. Well, not slavery, but during the time of like the Renaissance and all of that. But I was just wondering if you could share a little bit about your thoughts about immigration in the opposite direction.
You know, I think COVID did give some rise to that. And in fact, this morning, a friend of mine messaged me about some news articles about Americans actually living abroad. And sometimes they're actually giving up U.S. citizenship because the United States is one of two countries in the world that taxes you on your income no matter where you live. And so, you know, there are a lot of Americans around the world. You know, the Facebook co-founder is one of the great examples you can have, who went to Singapore and gave up his citizenship. There's a fair amount of that going on. You don't get to hear about that a lot. There are a lot of steps that happen before you can give up citizenship, but it definitely is happening. And COVID allowed the opportunity for people to work remotely. You know, and I think in the coming months and years, we'll see a lot more of that.
That makes a lot of sense, and I've heard a lot of people doing that. What do you think some of the benefits are of having dual citizenship? Because I've heard more people they're actually having the dual citizenship. They might be, I think I've got a friend of mine that's got a South American citizenship as well as an American. And then I know some other people that have, you know, different countries, maybe one of the European nations or things along those lines. So what are some of the things that you see as a benefit of having dual citizenship?
You know, there's a great benefit. To be honest, my children were born American and I'm British, so I wanted to make sure that they had their passports. But it gives you the freedom of what you you know, can do, and where your freedom of movement. And so I think there's a lot of benefit. I do see a lot of Americans getting citizenship in different countries. I hear about them. I'm in various immigration listservs where people will say, hey, I need a lawyer in such and such country. And so it's definitely happening, but it doesn't necessarily get reported as much in the news.
Well, I was going to get your thoughts about the Dreamers and everything, because I do think that that's very fascinating as well, what they've been going through. But I just wondered if there's any new things going on with the Dreamers that you can make people aware of, because I do know that that's been a fascinating topic of conversation for, I would argue, it seems like it's almost been a decade, but I don't think it's quite been a decade. But if you could share a little bit about how things are going in that regards.
You know, I have to run in just a second because I'm late for another meeting, but I think very briefly, the Congress is actually considering a bill for Dreamers. And what I will ask your listeners to do is, if they feel strongly about this and care about it, call your representative. You must get your voice heard, because your representative, whether it's a senator or congressperson, they need to hear your voice, so that they can say, my constituents want to see this. It's very important. The Dreamers are one of the most vulnerable group of people there are. They're all but Americans. And so we must give them the space and the opportunity to really be here securely. And so, you know, we'll see where that goes, because I think that's going to be one of the things that will bring the Congress together, I hope. But you as an individual citizen must do your part in making sure you call your representatives and get your voice heard.
And I had also heard that there have been some changes recently about how things were going with our Haitian immigrants as well.
There was just recently a new policy that came out for TPS, temporary protected status. And those folks have just been given a reprieve, so they have a little bit more time to stay here. But the Supreme Court actually has you know, created a problem for these people getting green cards. I'm so sorry. I'm really late for a meeting that I must go to. But Mark,
no problem.
Thank you so
I'm just
much
glad that I was able to have this conversation with you. If I could just have you wrap up one little quick question that I try to get all my guests to do, which is I'd love to have you share your thoughts about the international, I mean, to our international audience as to the word of positivity and a word of encouragement that you would give. I've definitely appreciated you being able to talk to me today. And I do know how things are. And sometimes you have to rush also. I'm just glad that I was able to have this time to talk to you. And hopefully I'll get you back in the near future. But you definitely enlightened us quite a bit.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. I've got a lot of people waiting for me. But thank you so much for having me, Mark. And hopefully we'll chat again another time. Take care. Bye.
Definitely. That was a great conversation with Ms. Watson. And I definitely look forward to having her back in the very near future to share more of her great wisdom about immigration. So definitely want to thank her for coming and giving us some great conversation.